So let me start today with the Fourier series. So and Fourier series basically are very nice for periodic functions. So if you have a function f x which equals to f x plus 2l for any x, and you say that the function is periodic, and you call this 2L the period. So now the statement is that any well-behaved periodic function can be expressed as a Fourier series. So which is, maybe I'll just draw a picture. So periodic function, for example, fx, then you have x, and I can draw anything I want, let's say like that, and then I periodically do the same thing, hopefully. So it doesn't have to be continuous. And now I can choose any interval which is of the length 2L, of the length of the period, and that gives me the whole information about the function. So the function doesn't have to be continuous. Okay, so if the function is discontinuous, it is reasonable to define the value of the function as the average of the limit from the left to the limit from the right. So I just define fx to be fx minus plus fx plus, which are the limits from left and right, divided by 2. So I define the function like that. And the statement is, I can write this as a expansion series where I sum from n equal to 1 to infinity and an cosine n pi x over L plus bn sine n pi x over L. So an and bn are called Fourier coefficients. Fourier coefficients, and of course they carry the information about the function. So all the rest, these cosines and sines, are the same for all functions, but what really carries the information about your particular function is this a0, an, and bn. So the question is how to extract these. Extract the Fourier coefficients a0, an, and bn. And in order to do that, so now I want front up and mid up. So the trick is very simple. So you just multiply the whole series which you want to get by either cosine m pi x over L or sine m pi x over L or whatever you want, and then integrate over that. So let me do it. Let me try to extract an. So in order to do that, I just integrate from minus infinity to infinity fx, and then I multiply the left hand side by cosine m pi x over L. So that's what I have from the left hand side. On the right hand side, I have a0 integral minus infinity, infinity cosine m pi x over L. That's from the first term. Then I have sum n equal to 1 to infinity an integral minus infinity, infinity cosine n pi x over L, cosine m pi x over L, over L dx. And then I have the term with bn. So bn. And then it'll be sine n pi x and cosine n pi x. Ah, sorry. Yeah, sure. Thank you so much. So, yeah. Minus L to L. I was just going to Fourier transform. Minus L to L. Thank you. So whenever you have any question, please ask me. Whenever you you see that I'm writing something stupid, which will be most of the time, please tell me. Okay. So now you can easily deal with this integral. So you can convince yourself that you are integrating over the whole period of cosine. So let's write an integral. So you are doing the average over that. And so there's the same amount of plus and same amount of minus. So this goes to zero. Now, this guy goes to L delta M M. So, and this guy goes to zero as well. So you can either say that sine and cosines are orthogonal, but you can easily convince yourself by really calculating these integrals. So all you need to do is actually formulas for cosine A times cosine B. And this you can extract from formulas something like cosine A plus B equals to, and now you have cosine A, cosine B minus sine A, sine B. And you can do minus, and you can invert these formulas. So you can always write cosine A times cosine B in terms of cosine A plus B, cosine A minus B. And then you use the fact that it averages through the tan, over the whole period. And so you get zero. So that's how you would arrive these things. Questions? Okay. So if no, then what I'm left out of the sum is L times AM times AM. So in other words, we have derived that AM or AN, I can return N back, is 1 over L minus L to L FX cosine N pi X over L. So similarly, you would arrive at BN but now I would have to multiply the whole thing by sine m pi x over L. And so the same type of argument would give me that I have minus L to L fx sine n pi x over L. Or you can just integrate the whole thing from minus L to L. Then this averages, and what you are left with is a zero. But integral from minus L to L gives you 2L. So a zero is 1 over 2L integral minus L to L fx dx. Can you still see that? Okay, so this is the result. And it gives you the prescription how to calculate these Fourier coefficients. If no questions, then I have a few remarks. So remark number one is that the integration in extracting these Fourier coefficients is over one period. So it doesn't tell you which, so I can easily as well integrate not from minus L to L, but from 0 to 2L. Or you can integrate from minus 553.3L to 555.3L, and it's still the same thing. So you can really, so the only important thing is that you integrate over the whole period. Second, if you have special functions to approximate, then maybe only part of the series is actually important. So in particular, if you have even function or odd, then obviously the symmetry gives you that even times even times odd is odd, and so on. And so you may immediately realize that if you have even function, you don't need sine series which are odd. So if you have even, then you have only cosine series. If you have odd, you have only sine series. Felt. So I told you that this is fine and well defined for well behaved function. So what does it mean, well behaved? So there are several criteria. So let me just mention one of them, which is Dirichlet criterion. And that basically says that f must be bounded. It must have finite number of maxima or minima. And minima, and it has finite number of discontinuities. So if you have that, then indeed your series converges to the function which you want. Then series converges. To fx. And by fx, I mean the average of left and right limits. Okay, so that's the second third remark. And finally, it has very nice physical interpretation. Physical interpretation, and that is very simple. So whenever I have a periodic signal, then I can decompose it into, well, plane waves, which are an infinite number of waves, which have different frequencies, but discrete, or different wavelengths, if you want. And then these Fourier coefficients are just these amplitudes of the waves. So that's the physical interpretation. So Fourier coefficients are amplitudes of waves. And these are of discrete of, well, infinite number of discrete wavelengths. Okay. Questions? Yeah.
0.7 on one side.
Sorry?
Is that integral supposed to be 0.7 on one side in the first? Because otherwise it's not a whole number of periods.
I need 2L. Ah, it's minus there. Ah, it should be plus. Should be plus. What I meant. That's what I meant. Plus. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Any other mistakes on the blackboard you can spot? So now, just another remark is integration. And differentiation. So you might expect that integration, so you would like to calculate the integral of the function fx. And now you are interested whether you can actually calculate it by taking the integrals of sines and cosines in the series. Of course, we can easily do those. So integration is always, so whenever the series converges to fx, then integration is always okay. On the other hand, and this is reflected by the fact that integration is basically like smoothing operation. So if your function is continuous and nice enough, so that you can expand it in this series, then if you integrate it, it will be even nicer. On the other hand, differentiation may be problematic. And so give me just an example. So differentiation is problematic. So you have a function which is defined to be from minus 1 to 1, and it's periodic, and it equals to 1 here and equals to minus 1 here. So this is your function. So now, if you calculate the series, it gives you 4 pi sum. So it's odd, so it will have only sine part, sine 2n minus 1 pi x divided by 2n minus 1. So now if I calculate the derivative of that, and if I calculate it term by term, and differentiating sine is simple, so I just get 2n minus 1 times pi in front of that, so it gives you 4 into infinity cosine 2n minus 1 pi x, hopefully. So now, if you take x not equal to 0, then this series does not converge. So basically, any x you take, if you go to n sufficiently large, it will be either plus or minus or whatever. So the an term does not go to 0. So this, so the series f prime x, well, the series diverges. It doesn't have the limit. On the other hand, you know, if you look at this function and I look at x not equal to 0, I look here, you know it's just equal to 1. So if I take the derivative, it equals to 0. So you see that in this case, you cannot do that. Of course, one of the reasons is that the Dirichlet criterion is not satisfied. So this function is discontinuous, but if you take its derivative, it will have some infinite jump here. And so we cannot use that. So always be cautious when you try to differentiate the functions. But if you can do that, then of course the differentiation is very simple. So it just brings n pi over L for sine and cosine terms here. So differentiation is nice. Yes? Huh? Yes. I agree. Yeah. So I'm just saying that the series does not converge to what you would expect to have.
Yeah, but you still get something infinite, or x equals zero.
For, but I was discussing x not equal to zero. Yeah. Yeah. For x equals zero, it's yeah. Yeah. Good. So now, what is very nice is half-range series. So imagine that your function is not defined everywhere. It doesn't have to be periodic, but it's defined only on a finite interval. So f x defined only on finite interval. Finite interval I. Okay, so then you have several possibilities what you can do. So now, of course, I want to approximate this function by the series. And the question is, what is the best that you can do? So possibility number one is that you take this interval to be equal to 2L, to the period of the function. So this is my function. X, it's defined here on this interval I, I just say, well, this I equals to 2L. And then I periodically repeat what is happening here. So like that, and of course to the minus sign as well. So this is one possible extension of the function. And then I calculate the standard Fourier series. So then I have A0 plus AN plus BN, sine, cosine, whatever. So I have all these terms here and there. And so this is one possibility. Of course, I'm in the end interested only in this interval. But yeah. So the second possibility. So second possibility is that this is my function. This is the original interval. But I say this is only half of the period. And I can extend this function to be either even or odd. So let me do it even first. So then I extend it like that. So I will say this whole thing is 2L. And then I periodically repeat what was happening here. So, and so on. But because I extend it so that it's even, so it's even extension, then of course the series will be given by just the cosine part. So it will have term A0 plus term AN. But it will have no terms, this BN, no sine terms. And the last possibility, of course, I'll just mention it, is that you don't extend it even, but you extend it odd. So I'll extend it like that. And then periodically repeat that. And then I would have only sine series. Questions? Okay. Can I do both at the same time? No. So now what is next very nice is so-called complex representation. So we had the representation in terms of sines and cosines, but sometimes it's better to have in terms of the exponentials. And for that, we need the beautiful formula how to express cosine and sine in terms of the exponentials. So just aside, so we have cosine n pi x over L, which is the exponential e to n pi x over L plus minus I n pi x over L divided by 2. And then sine is the same thing, but now pi x over L is e pi x over L minus e minus I n pi x over L divided by 2i. Okay, so if I take that series, which is over there, I have fx, so this is called complex representation or form. So fx, so now I have to plug everything in. So it's a0 plus sum an, and now I have e to, so I'm expanding cosine, so it's e to plus I plus e to minus I divided by 2, and there are these things there still, plus bn e to I minus e to minus I divided by 2i. So now I collect all the terms which are the same exponentials. So it's a0 plus sum. So now I want e to I, which is am over 2, and bn plus bn over 2i, e to I, and then I have an over 2 minus bn over 2i, e to minus I. So now n goes from 1 to infinity. So this is something like n equal to 0 term. So I can say, well, if I call this to be cn, and this to be c minus m, you can also see that this one is conjugate of that one. So it's cn star. So in that case, I can write the whole series as exponentials from minus infinity to infinity. I included that zero term there. And it's cn e minus plus I n pi x over L. And this is the complex form of the Fourier series. So now how would I extract the Cn? So either you can use what we have derived before. So you know how to extract An and Bn and A0. So this I called C0. Or you can just use the orthogonality of exponentials. Just let me write it here. So 0 to 2L e to I. Now here's minus sine pi x over L goes to delta n, and there is probably 2L standing here. So this is the orthogonality. And so evidently, I can now again multiply by e minus n pi x over L and use that orthogonality relation here. So I would recover that Cn equals to 1 over 2L integral from minus L to L at x e to minus I n pi x over L. And so in this form, the differentiation is really, really beautiful. If I differentiate with respect to x, I just bring I and pi over L in front of the expression. Questions? So another nice property of Fourier series is so-called Perceval Wahl's equality. So let me take two functions, fx, and expand it in this complex form. I'll have sin minus infinity infinity cn e to I n pi, if I do this, x over L. And then let me expand another function px. So now let me sum over m, so let me have the same summation index. So you have tm, different Fourier coefficients, e to I, m pi x over L. And let me now calculate what is the integral from 0 to 2L of fx gx dx. Okay, so this equals to, I exchange the summation and then the integration, so it will be sum over m and n, and it will be cm dm integral from 0 to 2L e to I n pi x, so it's n plus m pi x over L. So we know that this guy from that orthogonality there is 1 over 2L delta n minus m. So if only if n equals to minus m, yes?
Isn't it 2L?
2L. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, please tell me. I'll be writing very many mistakes. And okay, so we have that. So this equals to 2L. Now I have sum over. So this kills one of the sums. So if m equals to minus n or whatever, so I will have cn. So I will have summation over n, cn, and d minus n. But you know from there that this is equal to d star of n. So this equals to 2L sum over n d star n cn. So let me take now specifically f equals to g. So then we have integral from 0 to 2L f square on the left hand side. And on the right hand side we have 2L sum over n cn absolute value square. So what does it tell us is that basically this is the L2 norm. So it's like Lebesgue integrable functions, square integrable functions. So L2 norm of function f equals to L2, where this is small l, form of the corresponding Fourier series. So f in L2, which is the Lebesgue integrable things, equals to f in L2. This is the series. This is the series of the corresponding the coefficients of the corresponding series. So that's the Parseval, let's say.
Parseval.
Sorry.
No, it's A. It's P A R. The name of the guy. Yes, it's Parseval.
Parseval. Okay. And 2L. Okay, good.
Can I have a question?
Yes.
When you get the delta function, the delta, you could choose either m.
Here, yes. I can, yeah.
So does it make any difference if you
call it? It shouldn't make, right? Shouldn't make. Yeah, yeah. I hope it doesn't. Okay. So just to finish this Fourier series, let me do something fancy in the end. And so we will calculate some examples of this Parseval theorem. So let me calculate the Fourier series of the Dirac delta function. So you already know what it is. thanks to them. Yes?
The R2 norm is the square root of that.
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, I can square that, right? Shouldn't be problem. I think still this is still valid. It's still valid.
Then it would have 4R².
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so up to some coefficients, it is true. Okay, now a series of Dirac delta function. Okay, so I have minus L plus L. And at the origin, this is the Dirac delta function. So if you calculate it very formally, so let me first calculate, Cn is 1 over 2L integral from minus L to L delta function delta x e to minus n pi x over L. So what is this? Yeah. OK, so this just selects the 0 thing. So I will have 0. Formula is equals to 1 over 2L. So which means that the delta function is written 1 over 2L e to n pi x over L. But it's not the whole truth. So what we have calculated is actually the periodic extension of this. So we have to periodically repeat what we are having here. So what we indeed calculated is this thing, and so on, to minus as well. So this function is called Dirac's comb. And so what does it mean? So we have calculated sum over m delta x minus 2ml on the left-hand side. And we have shown that it equals to 1 over 2L sum over n e to n pi x over L. This thing is called Poisson integral formula. And it seems to be a useful thing. Questions? Yes?
How did you find the Poisson integral formula again?
I'm sorry?
How did you get this formula again?
How did I read it? So I calculated Cn exponentially, which is 1 over 2L. So I was expanding delta x, but what indeed I am expanding is not delta x, but it's periodically repeated. So I have delta function sitting at 0, at what is that? L, 2L, 3L, at 3L, and so on and so on. So on the left hand side, what I have is this thing. And on the right hand side, this is the Cn, and this is just the Fourier expansion. Other questions to Fourier series? So you will have the whole tutorial basically about Fourier series. So let me start now the second. So this was the baby stuff. So now small children stuff. The Laplace transform. But before I do that, let me just do the definition. And you will call integral transform So I'll deal with all the time by head, which is usually reserved for Fourier transform. But so at some variable s, which will be the integral from a to b this function here is called kernel of the transformation. So you are given the function and some kernel function, which will be the same for Laplace transform. It will be one function. For Fourier transform, it will be another function. For Fourier series, it's another function. It's so-called Dirichlet kernel and so on. And then there are some things. So now Laplace transform. So usually it is written like L F S. So given the function, you do the Laplace transform and you evaluate it at variable S. But as I said, I'll denote it just with hat. I'll just write that because it's simpler. And in this case, A equal to 0, B equals to infinity, and the kernel is, I have FT, and the kernel is just the exponential minus st dt. So this is the Laplace transform. So now, of course, there are typical questions you can ask whenever you have some definition. And most of them are whether the definition is useful. So first question actually is, which functions and for which functions the Laplace transform exists. And so staring at this, you would just say, well, whenever the integral is fine, whenever I can calculate the integral. So I'll just formulate one theorem, which is okay, and which says when it is well defined. But it's not exhaustive, so and we shall return back to this tomorrow. And the second question which you can ask, whether it is actually unique. So whether you can have two functions which have the same Laplace transform. If it is so, then you cannot define the inverse, and that would be bad. So you really need that for different functions, it gives different Laplace transforms. So to address these two questions, so you have theorem one, and this is really, well, it's not powerful, it's almost obvious, but let me write it down. So let FT be piecewise. I can write like that, continuous. Yes. And so for Laplace transform, you see that you integrate from 0 to infinity. So basically what you want is that your functions are defined for t bigger than 0. So you don't care what's happening with the functions for t smaller than 0. So on t bigger than 0. And satisfy the condition condition. So now we want that this is sufficiently small so that the integral exists. So FT, the absolute value of FT, is smaller than m times e to at for t bigger than t. And fixed non-negative constants a, m, and t constants a, m, and t. Then F exists for all S bigger than A. So that's the theorem. I say it's almost trivial. So just guarantee that the integral exists, and that's it. So to address the second question, I'll just mention that at functions, and so we shall formulate this a little bit better tomorrow, but when we do it in complex. So functions having the same Laplace transform cannot differ on an interval of a positive length, cannot differ on an interval of positive length. So it means they can differ at various points, but never on a finite thing. Okay. Questions?
Tell us when you lost the statement again.
What did I lose?
You lost the statement again. The function having the same.
Can function having the same Laplace transform cannot differ on an interval of positive length.
What did you mean? I didn't understand.
So you calculate that, and you say, well, so you calculate that for one function, and you calculate that for another function, and you end up with the same result. So the statement is these functions basically are the same, which you started from, except I can redefine them at isolated points. So if I function like that, and I instead of this point, I redefine it here, it will not change the integral, of course. But if I change it already here, it will have different Laplace transform.
Can I change it on an interval of positive length so that the Laplace transform will change only in isolated points?
That's a good question. I don't think so, but I don't know.
Well, I think the Laplace transform is continuous, so it can't change it in isolated points.
Okay, so you will calculate some examples just using this integral formula in the tutorial today, so we don't have to do that. So let me just discuss some basic properties.
Can you please explain the first statement in the middle board, that
So it's obvious. So you are doing the, so you are killing the contribution of f in the integral by exponential s minus st. So now you want this, so ft, so you want the integrand to be sufficiently small at infinity, so to behave nicely at infinity. So you want to kill it, so you want to guarantee that f doesn't grow very, very a lot in, close to infinity. So that's why you kill it by this, and a must be smaller than s. So if s is bigger, then that exponential kills this exponential, and the integral exists.
S must be equal to.
Well, in this theorem, it should be maybe bigger than A. But yeah, it may be either bigger or equal. So let's put bigger, just to be safe. Anyway, so there are certainly functions which do not obey this theorem and which still have the Laplace transform. So this is just a, yeah. So let's put bigger as bigger than A. Basic. So anyway, as a physicist, you would always just, well, given any function, you try to calculate the Fourier transform, the Laplace transform, right? And if it gives something sensible, then you don't care about any theorems, and you just have the function, and you have the Laplace transform. Okay, so basic properties. So one, or A, is the linearity. So you have constants, and then you have a function, and so A and B are constants, and F and G are functions, then is equals to f times f plus b times g. So this is linearity. So these properties, which I just write down, immediately fall from this integral. So b, this is more interesting. So you have e to at times the function, and you do now the Laplace transform, then point s equals to f at point s minus a. Again, trivial thing to prove. Just plug it into a thing. So now you can define a shift of function. So this is equal to 0 for 0 smaller than t and b. Again, I'll just do these things here. And it equals to f t minus b for t bigger than b. So what does this thing does is if you have a function which looks like this, then fb of x, you just shift this, so this will be b, and you start with the same function there. You just shift the function to the right by the value of b. Let's shift. So if you define fb like that, then fb, the Laplace transform of that is e minus bs fs. And this is very useful for difference equations. So whenever you have difference equations, this property, these two properties are very useful. You will just see that in a minute. And the final, so this is called shift property. Shift property. And C is the scaling property. You have F, and you scale by A, that is a constant. Then this equals to 1 over A, A, F. At point S over A. So middle goes there and back goes here. So these are the three properties. You can easily prove them just plugging into the integral. And it's called scaling property. Last one. And they are very useful for calculating the various Laplace transforms. So when doing this in tutorials, try to use them. It helps a lot. So now, let me just show you how useful the property B is for the difference equations. So, example, using B, solve the difference equation difference equation. So let me just do the example. So we have y of t minus some constant times y at t minus h, where h is fixed, equals to ft, right hand side. And you have, of course, the condition that y of t equals to ft equals to 0 for t smaller than 0. So this is an example of difference equation. So now, of course, the trick is to use the Laplace transform. So and I'll try to use this property here. So if you do the Laplace transform on this, then you have y here minus c times. And then this is precisely the shift which you have here. It's precisely this guy here. So you are using this thing. It's e to minus hs, c times e minus hs. Y equals to f. Okay, so from here, I can write down that y equals to f over 1 minus c e minus hs. So now it's useful to write this as a series. So it's 1 over 1 minus x, and I expand in x. So this is equal to sum n equal to 0 to infinity f, and now it'll be c to power n e minus h s n. So I'm just expanding 1 over 1 minus x. Okay. So now look at that. So we have Laplace transform on the left hand side and product of two Laplace transforms on the right hand side. But I can use the property B again. So the property here is, so I can use this property again, I hope. So this gives me that it's the Laplace transform of the whole thing. So this is sum n 0 to infinity f. Now the shift is so for each n the shift is minus hs minus hn. That's what I'm saying. The shift is minus hn. Okay. So these are just the numbers. So I can now look beneath what is beneath the hats. So I can look beneath. And I have the solution y equals to sum and 0 to infinity. So now what is this? Is f at t minus hn c to power n. And this is the solution. I'm just looking what is beneath that. So I did basically the inverse Laplace transform, but I just looked beneath the hats. And that is that. Of course, this the sum will be only finite, because if I increase n sufficiently large, then this will at some point it will be smaller than 0. And then my initial condition or this condition tells you that it's 0. So the sum will be only finite. It will not go to infinity. Okay. Questions? Do you want an example on this or not really? Who wants an example on this? One, not enough. Okay, I'll give you privately. Okay, and so finally, let me have 5 more minutes. So that's very nice, difference equations. But of course, this is very useful if you are doing numerical stuff or whatever. But if you do it analytically, you need differential equations. And for that, this Laplace transform is very, very nice for solving the initial value problem. So solving initial value problem. So let me again formulate a theorem, which is almost triviality. So let f satisfies conditions of one of theorem one, conditions of theorem one, and The derivative of f is piecewise continuous. Piecewise continuous for, again, t bigger than 0. Then, so if you take first derivative of f and then you do the Laplace transform, exists. For all s bigger than a, and that what is interesting, this equals to s time f minus f evaluated at t equals 0. So basically what you are saying, if I start with the differentiation and do the Laplace transform, it goes to an algebraic multiplication by S. So just to prove this, it's very simple. You and I can do that. So what is this? It's integral from 0 to infinity, f prime e minus st dt. So now you can integrate per partes. So I will integrate this one and differentiate that one. So it gives you f e minus st infinity 0 minus, and if I differentiate this one, it gives me minus s, so it will be plus s integral to infinity f e minus st dt. So of course, this is just the Laplace transform of f. So it's this part. And this guy, so now you know, you need to know that f does not contribute at infinity, but it's guaranteed by all these conditions which we imposed in theorem 1 and this theorem and so on. So by all the requirements which we have, the contribution at infinity vanishes, and a contribution at 0, this is 1 and this is f at 0. Which is the proof. Okay. Sorry? Minus f. Very good. Thank you. Very good. Okay. And so this has, of course, a generalization which I will end up today. Generalization. So imagine now I have f double prime. Then I do the same thing. So now I have e minus st. I integrate per partes f prime. So I integrated once plus. Then, okay. So then I will have what is left here is one derivative here, but I integrate again per partes. So it will be plus s times the same thing, but now without derivative e minus st f infinity 0 and plus s square. I got rid of all the derivatives here and it will be just f. Okay. So again, by some requirements on f, I can say that this is just minus f prime at 0. This is just minus f at 0. And so you have a beautiful formula which can be in generality written like f. You differentiate n times and do the Laplace transform and equals to Sn f minus some k equal to 0 to n minus 1 Sk f n minus 1 minus k at 0. So this is the generalization of the formula. And so obviously you can use it not only for the first order equations, but for equations of arbitrary order. And you will see that tomorrow and in the tutorial as well. So that's for now. Well, thank you. Questions?